Welcome to Flip Table Theology, a weekly conversation centered around flipping tables of oppression, injustice, privilege, division, and religion as acts of faith and worship.
We are so excited you guys are joining us at this table. Grab a cup of coffee or a cup of tea and let's dive in. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Flip Table Theology. I am Christy Love and I am joined today by friends around the table that I'm going to let introduce themselves. And I'm going to ask this question as you go around and introduce yourself. How's your heart today? How are you feeling as you come to this table? I know last week's podcast was emotional for Holly and for Rue and I. It has also just kind of been a little bit of a complicated and challenging week, personally and professionally in some different ways. So I just want to name and acknowledge that and just kind of do a quick check-in. So Rue, you were sitting to my left, so I'm going to start with you and we'll kind of go around. So
Hi guys, I'm Rue. My pronouns are they, he. I've been sitting with a lot of things this last week after processing our conversation. Personally, I feel a lot lighter after just kind of, you know, giving space to having those conversations, you know, talking to the community about my experience. That was really freeing, and I'm really grateful for everyone at this table.
Do you feel like you were holding like a weight to, like, at some point I'm gonna have to talk about this?
Yes, I had a lot of tension and stuff I wanted to talk about, but just didn't hadn't happened yet. I feel a weight lifted, which has been really, really nice. It's a lot of self-care done afterwards of just, like, kind of recentering. I got to have some time with my family this weekend, which was really beautiful. So I'm holding, I think, emotions for other people on this table and in the community, but myself, I'm feeling lighter.
Good. Well, it's really good to have you back. I know this is not your first week back. That was last week, and we talked about that. So if you missed that, and you're like, "Oh, Rue's back," you missed something very important. You need to go back and listen to the episode before this.
Yeah.
But it's good to have you back around the mic.
Yes.
All right, and we have a friend visiting us today. I'm so stoked. Our good friend Sarah is here. So Sarah, introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, how you know all of us, what you're doing around this table, and how your heart is today.
Sure. So my name is Sarah, and I consider all of these three people to be wonderful friends that I have met over the course of the past couple of years and grown close to over the past couple of years through my growing involvement with community outreach and social justice activities. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really grateful to have this opportunity to share this time and space with them. It's been really neat to listen to the three of you, amongst others, talk about various things over months now. Mm-hmm. So it's really neat to be a part of. So that's what I have to say as far as an introduction. If you want to know how my heart is, you can probably tell, just, I'm a little rushed this week and leading up to it. Every day has had a thing with a capital T. And
on a call with Sarah the other night, and Sarah's like, "I have to make a sheep costume after this." And I was like, "Man, I don't miss those days."
My 8-year-old daughter was in a school musical and she needed to be a sheep. Uh-huh. Within 24 hours. And so, there was that and then many other things. So I am very rushed. It's been either all or nothing for me for the past few days where it's just like downtime out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm reeling from the things leading up to it. So I take a few minutes to breathe, but then it just escalates back. Mm-hmm. The acceleration just out of
poor Sarah. She texts us today and is like, "Anybody have time for coffee?" And I'm like, "No, but you can come hang out with us on the podcast."
Okay.
So I love it. I'm so glad that you came to hang out.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Hal? How you doing?
I feel like there's
Is
more.
Is your heart rate back down? We had a small like mommy emergency right before the podcast.
My sweet 4-year-old Hudson was distraught about some guidance that we were not going to be playing outside. Because it's raining outside, and it's been a day, and he needed to take that information, and he needed to go hide with it. While I understand the activated response of fight or flight, after several minutes of looking for him and trying to find him, we were all in fight or flight mode. So we did find him. He had found a very large chair to hide behind. And so we were able to have a conversation about safety and the need to communicate for space, but at least let people know where you are and you're safe. So my heart is definitely still activated from that. But I feel like I'm probably embodying the spring in a lot more ways than I would have communicated about before this season in my world. I think in a lot of ways I come into spring with so much excitement, and early spring has so much excitement. I think for me it's this place of like the days are longer, there's more sunlight, like there's color coming back, like the birds are all really, 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 really happy right now, and I like jump into that space, and I feel the energy of that space. But I feel like spring is a season of contrast, and I feel like I just am really embodying that right now. Like I've been in a season, and I know we talked about that some last week on the podcast. So another plug, if you haven't listened, you should listen to that one.
It's kind of important, yeah. But a critical conversation.
I feel like my season has been silent. It has been very quiet. It's been very private, and I feel like I am both in a space of like learning to be in that space, and honestly in some ways just like grateful for that, and in other ways I think this week has showed me just those reminders of like mental illness is not necessarily always seasonal, and it can come in both times where you expect it and times when you don't necessarily expect it. And so I feel like my heart is in this really crazy space of like I am loving more time to be outside with my kiddos and just be not rushed and getting to enjoy the flowers and the bees. And I'm enjoying just feeling this really intimate connection with nature that I've been in this season of just like allowing myself to fully embody that part of myself. And I'm also in a season where there's just a lot of heaviness in my heart and there's a sadness there, and carrying both and like embracing that both can coexist. And so I feel like my week has been some really beautiful highs, and I know we'll talk about one of those on a trip Christy and I got to have here in just a little bit, and also just like sitting with and being okay with sitting in those lows and those emotional places of just being down.
So for me, I come into this space today kind of like Holly, a little bit activated and dysregulated, for different reasons, various reasons. One of them, we had our own little motherhood crisis last night. I have an 18-year-old who has excessive food allergies, and we've spent a lifetime of like being very, very careful. And there was a new ingredient last night in dinner, that should not have been an issue, but ended up being an issue. And it was kind of one of those, oh my gosh, I don't think you've ever had this before. And it was very scary. So part of our headbutt with your little one was the headbutt with my older one, who was like, I still just don't feel good and I don't want to run around today. So there's that. Also, my heart is just really heavy. My mind has just been really, really focused for the last 24 hours. As we record this, we are here in the state of Missouri, which comes with so many different political complications in the last few years. But one of them is that Missouri is still a death penalty state. And yesterday at 6 p.m., Missouri carried out its first execution of 2024. And it was a case that was incredibly heartbreaking. It was a case that was really, really challenging theologically. It was a case that had a lot of unprecedented effort to spare the inhumane ending of life for Brian Dorsey. Brian committed murder back in 2006. He shot and killed his cousin and her husband. He admitted that and pled guilty. And in no way, shape, or form do we discount the loss of life that happened that ended Brian Dorsey in prison. But in prison, there was a radical transformation of heart and of life. And he ended up living in the honors dorm without a single infraction in the entire time that he was there, which is just not heard of. Mm-hmm. He served as the prison barber, where he cut the hair of not only other inmates, but guards and the warden. And at, you know, as maneuvers were trying to happen legally, to commute his sentence to life in prison without the possibility of parole, this really unbelievable and unprecedented outpouring from prison guards and prison staff and former warden, like 70 of them, who wrote the governor to say, like, if ever there's an example of how the prison system is supposed to be reformative, Brian's a poster child of that. And it's going to cause extreme duress in the prison community for him to be executed. But Missouri Supreme Court, our governor, the federal Supreme Court all did not intervene. And so Brian's life was ended last night, just a little bit after 6 p.m. My heart is heavy for that as a human. My heart is heavy for that as a pastor. There's a lot of theological layers to the death penalty, especially from a political space that claims to be pro-life. I have a lot of struggles with that. We will unpackage those thoughts theologically on a future podcast. Today is not the day for that, because I felt like we didn't want to react and rush into a conversation. We've also got some really good friends who are going to be joining us for a podcast in the future, around the policies and the you know, the theologies around the death penalty. So look forward to that later this spring, early summer. But that's definitely still weighing on my heart today. So I was one of many clergy from around the country that signed petitions and sent letters and made phone calls. And, you know, sadly, that did not change the mind of a pro-life governor in our state. So I'm aware of that today as well. So we bring all of this emotion and all of this kind of dysregulation to this table today. And I thought it would be appropriate for us to kind of intersect that with an experience that Holly and I had this weekend. And so I want to share with you a little bit about what we did. And so Rue and Sarah kind of give you an idea of what we were doing and exposed to and processing. And then I just want to kind of open that up for conversation. And so I currently am 5 weeks away from graduation. I can count them now on one hand, with my doctorate of ministry from Eden Theological Seminary in St. Louis. So shout out to Eden. Great program. If you are looking to further your theological education, I highly, highly recommend their MDiv program, which a certain someone around this table will be starting next year. Very excited. And their DMIN program has been amazing, but they had convocation in the spring every year, and they had convocation this past weekend and brought in an amazing lineup of speakers. I would have loved to have been there for all of them, but we were not able to attend Thursday night when O.B. Hendricks was there. But if you have not engaged with him or his writing, he has several phenomenal, phenomenal books that we will link in the show notes. And so I know that was phenomenal. I've heard a lot of great feedback about it. But Holly and I went up Friday specifically because Cole Arthur Riley was speaking at Eden Friday night. And if you are not familiar with the writing and the work of Cole Arthur Riley, you need to be. They are a Black queer poet and liturgist, writer, just prolific, deep thinking, deep processing human, who has given the world two beautiful gifts in their books. Their first book was called This Here Flesh, which was amazing. And then Black Liturgies was released recently. And she led a conversation with Kristen Smith from the Holy Smokes Movement, and it was outside Friday night, which we were not prepared for. We missed that memo, so it was super cold in St. Louis Friday night. So Holly and I are like teeth chattering, huddled next to a bonfire, trying to stay warm as we listen to this unbelievable, amazing conversation, really about nature and kind of like reconnecting our spirits and our bodies. There was a conversation about, you know, just the role of trying to heal the connection with Black bodies in nature mm-hmm. in a space that has often been really triggering. Mm. There was a lot of conversation around white supremacy in nature and some of those kind of things. But I want to kind of, Holly, I want you to speak into this because I know for you, your heart as a poet mm-hmm. and as a liturgist and as an eco-theologian was just like soaring in that space that night. And so talk a little bit about maybe a couple of your takeaways from that conversation, and we'll kind of open this a little bit wider, not to just focus specifically mm-hmm. on Cole and that work, but kind mm-hmm. of some of those larger topics.
Yeah, there is so much to unpackage, and I, I can't do justice to even going back over some of those points, like her perspective, the perspectives that were shared at that table. At the end of that conversation, they brought up a member of the Forestry Service in St. Louis. I probably said that right. I cannot remember her official title. And they had a couple members of a reverend and the dean of Eden. So I saw these, I was so connected to what they were saying. And sometimes I think with my neurodivergent brain, like I get so connected to things, but I miss the details of like those titles and those names, but so much respect for that table. And I think some of my big takeaways from that were just the diversity in those voices of their passion and connection to the natural world that did not come from sometimes that typical voices that we see that are the loudest. And a lot of the time you see able-bodied people that are able to be super active in natural spaces, climbing mountains and like biking marathons and things like that. And I value voices, and I value, and a lot of them will name their privilege of being able to be very active in natural spaces. Mm-hmm. I know there's a wealth component to that, being able to travel and see mm-hmm. different sides of it. And I think it was really beautiful. One of the parts that Cole started with was talking about her own battle with chronic illness mm-hmm. and being bedridden a lot because of being in a lot of pain mm-hmm. and her capacity to connect even deeper to nature and that in a season where like it took a lot more effort to be outdoors and mm-hmm. Just talking about the experience of with her partner living on a land that used to be an orchard, and they're trying to restore the orchard, and just like the beautiful poetry of writing these beautiful liturgies in a season where they're trying to restore land that has been lost and has been neglected and bring back those trees, which is really moving for me, very emotional. And I feel like a voice that's definitely needed. I was also really appreciative of her naming, and I'm going to be careful how I say this because I recognize this is not comparable, but like her naming the ancestral wound of connection to nature from a time of being removed so violently from their homeland and being taken and enslaved in America, and that loss of connection to what was natural and what was beautiful. And I think it allowed me to process some of that, like how much of our ancestral roots probably do have that bloodline to us of like our connection to nature. And I was processing that a lot, even my own ancestors and their journeys overseas to America and what their nature spaces looked like. A lot of my ancestors, I always joke, they come from far, far, far up north places like mm-hmm. Ireland and Sweden and Norway. And I don't understand because I do not like cold weather, but I respect that that's where a lot of my lineage comes from. But I think even just understanding those pieces of it, naming that and honoring that, that there is like a generational disconnection, I think, from the natural world. And it was very eye-opening to hear that from a Black woman who is able to tell that line of things for her and for her family. And so I walked away from that processing a lot. I walked away from that reading her work a little bit differently even, and just a lot more respect, I think. I will say I had a really beautiful moment while we were there. It was freezing, but the event started later. And so it started at kind of the evening hour and getting to watch sunset on the square. And then as night progressed, like by the end of it, the stars were out and it got colder. The stars were out. And I remember a moment just like looking up at the stars and just taking in the constellations and the stars and just being really grateful that we could see them in the city. And my little girl and I have been going outside at night and looking at the stars and naming constellations together and stuff like that. And so I had a moment where I was like, you know, connecting to her. And when I came home, she had handed me a little card she made, and it said, "Mommy, I love it when we look at the stars together." And she said, "I went and looked at the stars last night." And I was like, "I looked at them too." And it was just this really beautiful, poetic moment of like, I think it just like replicated a lot of what was being talked about, which was like, nature is all about connection and it's all about relationship. And I could go on and on and on about that, but I will pause and let you kind of talk. But those are some of my big.
Yeah. And I think that's really what we want to focus on today. It's not so much, you know, the conversation that we were part of Friday night, but really like kind of like taking that conversation as a springboard. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things for me that I've been processing a lot post that night and kind of like reflecting on some of the things that were said, is like deconstructing my own relationship with creation and with nature, and recognizing how much I have neglected nature in the name of productivity and then in the name of busyness, and in the name of comfort, if I'm honest. You know, I deal with my own chronic health issues, and so like sometimes being out in nature is complicated and hard, and like my body doesn't always respond really well to extreme temperatures, and so like that can be really complicated. I have a weird relationship with the sun and like sun exposure because of some of those things. And so I've just really kind of been processing a lot though with specifically the story that you're referring to, where Cole talks about like, even when she doesn't feel good and all she could do was look out her window, she could connect to the barn swallows that would fly outside her window. And like that made her almost like hyper fixate on like small aspects of nature. And I found myself just kind of like realizing, man, I spent a lifetime on this earth really not being grounded in the natural world around me. And I am very much grounded a lot of times in my head and in like my own activities and research and reading and, you know, all of these kind of things. And, you know, having Holly as a best friend and someone that I've done ministry with for 10 years definitely challenges me because of your amazing passion, not just for nature, but your passion for finding spirituality in nature and seeing the beauty of creation in nature. And so like the things that you get excited about, I love to see that. But for most of our relationship, I've not really shared that with you. Like that's not necessarily a commonality that we've had. Like I appreciate it about you and I benefit from it because I learn from it. But I think that's one of the places I want to start and kind of open this up to you, Rue and Sarah, of like, for me, I almost want to like use the old school evangelical term of like conviction. but like, I think that there has been like a connection over these last few days as I've processed some of that of just like, man, I watch seasons change out my window or when I drive or, you know, whatever, but I don't really take time to value the natural world that's around me and the lessons that it has to teach me and all of those pieces. And what can I do to be more intentional in that space? And so I start that to say, tell me about your relationship with the world and with nature. And
oh gosh. One, I just want to like say how jealous I think I am of the conversations that y'all got to sit around and just like, enjoyed hearing about the perspective, because I love Cole Arthur Riley. She's lovely. And also just like has so much of the embodied part, which I think is what I was like processing as I was hearing y'all talk about like the embodied piece of being in the natural world, and how little opportunity there is, I think, for myself to really embrace that. I think my relationship with nature and outside, and like, I think it's, I've always had that. Like, I grew up on a farm, so would like, that was like almost like an escape thing for me, would be like to go outside, in the woods, be like, all right, people are a lot right now. I'm just going to like go outside and sit with my dog and, you know, just enjoy whatever is happening around me. So I think I've always loved being outside in that way. Something I'm processing a lot more, even as y'all are like talking about this, is how reflections of being in relationship with nature also impact my relationship with people. Mm-hmm. And how I can, that mirrors that so much. And I think it's been separate in my head for a bit of like the reciprocity there is, mm-hmm. The level of like what I do impacts what the atmosphere is happening, like what you know, the bugs, like there's so many little things that everything that humans do impact the world around them, but also how that's kind of the design, what I hope to embody in relational components is that reciprocity of growth, and I don't know, that piece in relational components with other people. Mm-hmm. I think Western perspectives have a transactional view mm-hmm. a lot. Mm-hmm. When it comes to nature, when it comes to people, when it comes to just mm-hmm. in general, it's a transactional worldview.
Yeah. And I think that piece connects so much with what you were naming, Holly, of like the privilege so often of nature in our current culture. Mm-hmm. Because I agree wholeheartedly. It's like, if I'm going to experience nature, mm-hmm. it's going to be an event.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be transactional. Like, I'm going to plan a trip. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go and do a thing. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, whether that is, mm-hmm. I want to go and hike this trail or mm-hmm. see this waterfall mm-hmm. or, like, take this picture or whatever that is.
It has to be mind-blowing.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It has to be Instagram-worthy or something. Yeah. But, like, yeah. you know, so it does become
yeah.
so incredibly transactional. That I think mm-hmm. we've lost the ability mm-hmm. to simply just like appreciate the mundaneness of it. And I think mm-hmm. that's actually the word that Cole used Friday night when she was kind of like trying to appreciate and connect with mm-hmm. the mundane in mm-hmm. nature and find beauty mm-hmm. in that. Yeah. Like find beauty in the barn swallows that are outside mm-hmm. the window, that it doesn't have to be this big adventure that I'm able to go on. Mm-hmm. I can mm-hmm. still find beauty that yeah. meets me where I am. Mm-hmm.
I think there's also, in it being transactional, I think to really appreciate nature, there's also a loss of control that I think...
Maybe that's why I don't like it.
Because there's so many elements, right? I think of, like, yeah. camping, mm-hmm. like, going outside in those moments mm-hmm. of, like... it is subject to what the weather is doing. It is subject mm-hmm. to what animals are there, what season it is. Like, there's so mm-hmm. many pieces that take it out of that control piece. Mm-hmm. And I had this was a big event. And sometimes I need those big moments to, like, shake me out of my, like, mm-hmm. you know, little, I'm going to my 9-to-5 things. mm-hmm. I went to see the totality of the eclipse on Monday, which was just breathtaking. And it made me feel really small. Mm-hmm. And I think nature, whenever you try to understand it, even in its most small components of like little things, mm-hmm. You kind of realize like, wow, I don't have as much control mm-hmm. as I thought I did, or I thought humans did in general. Mm-hmm. And it makes you feel small. And I think I need that sometimes to be like, I'm not in control of everything and that's good. and I can just appreciate and be in awe of how mm-hmm. amazing this thing is moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about nature that inherently decenters us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of why we don't always engage in it
mm-hmm.
because we inherently are all about us mm-hmm. and, you know, what we're doing mm-hmm. and our agendas and our timelines and our schedules. And mm-hmm. I think just slowing down and mm-hmm. being present in the mm-hmm. mundane and appreciating and not having control, you know, that is a perspective shifter.
Mm-hmm.
That again, like I'm becoming more and more aware of as I continue to process
mm-hmm.
that is a perspective that is available to us every moment of every day.
Yeah.
And how very little we take the time to engage in it.
I want to jump in for a second before Sarah shares her heart. I think it's a loss of control. I also think that there is a piece of modern day humans that we are so familiarity based. I mean, and it's this piece of like, you leave your house, you come back and expect it to be in the same condition you left it in for the most part, like unless you have people at home that are going to clean it while you're gone. Like you come home and you expect there to be the things in the house that are there. You expect things to be left where you left them. Like sometimes we come home and you're like, I wish there was a magical wand that would clean the house for me, but it doesn't happen, alas. But there's something about that we carry that familiarity into the natural world where you walk outside and you expect there to be grass that you don't look down. You just expect your lawn to be made of grass. And I think that something that I was taught to embody as a kid, and that was growing up, I got to grow up in the privilege of growing up in the mountains. Like I grew up in Colorado Springs, and so we spent most of my summers in Rocky Mountain National Park. And so I have this beautiful privilege of having such proximity to things that were just breathtaking, like being on top of the mountain, hiking waterfalls. In fact, the other day I was doing some work for exciting things that are coming. And I pulled up an old Google Drive folder I have of like old photos. And I was looking through because I had, when I was at home at one point, my parents' house, I had snapped some pictures of pictures because, you know, they're all printed out. And I found this really cute picture of me as a baby with my mom at a lake in the mountains. And it was just like, and I just felt like I was like this cute chubby little redhead with like this little smile. And I just like saw her. And I was just like, I so appreciate that environment that taught me to be in awe. But I also, when I think back to my childhood, I'm grateful that the awe that was taught to me, and that I think that I've just somehow managed to always connect to. And I don't know what that has been in me. I just know that I've always connected to awe. I can think back and be like, I remember this waterfall, hiking up to it, and it was breathtaking. It was beautiful. I also remember sitting at a McDonald's drive-thru and staring at these little tiny starlings that were sitting in the snow looking for like probably scraps of the trash. And I remember feeling so much love for these starlings. And I was probably in elementary school that I remember I started crying because I just loved them so much. And I just respected them so much. And to me, that contrast of like big and small, and I grieve that we miss the small. Like for me, I walk outside my front door and it's like, oh, there's more flowers. Like there's more henbit that has grown overnight. There's actually a name, a word, I'm not going to say the word right, but for the sound that a mushroom makes when it comes out of the ground, and like mushrooms come out in the middle of the night, and we miss that. It's like we assume that the world will look the same when we come out, that we miss the subtle changes, and changes happen so subtly that it's just like, oh, there's flowers. When did that happen? And we miss the fact that there had been weeks of growth and weeks of that becoming. And so I just want to jump in there and name that, because I think that has been a huge piece for my heart, is like keeping that childlike wonder that is not aware of familiarity yet.
How about you, Sarah?
Well, I've been sitting here thinking that my own relationship with nature is very complicated. It's a love-hate relationship. I'm not a big fan of like camping and hiking, and that's more, you know, some of those physical elements too. I struggle with extreme temperatures myself, and sometimes it's challenging to be out in places where there's a loss of control over my body and what it's doing and things around me. But at the same time, I spent a good chunk of my academic life in college and my undergraduate experience trying to decide whether or not I wanted to be a biology major or something else. And so ultimately I decided to get a biology minor, which enabled me to take the cool classes. Like it wasn't just bio 108, it was invertebrate zoology and it was entomology. And I got to take these really neat classes and have these really neat experiences being outside and looking at insects and collecting insects and ultimately freezing them or putting them in ethanol and pinning them to a piece of styrofoam to make a cool collection. That is one of my most prized possessions. I will conclude that by saying I still have it. And I adore it. Like, it broke my heart at the time. It was really a weird kind of thing to put, like, a dragonfly in a Ziploc bag and put it in the freezer.
Don't talk about it.
And then take it out and move its appendages with pins and let it dry out and display it and label it, identify it with the guides and all that. It was... Poor Holly. I'm destroying my friend.
I'm grieving for this dragonfly.
You could see Holly's facial expressions as Sarah's so saying these things.
And I'm like passionate about this memory. I'm like, this is so cool for me.
I respect that it gave you awe. I just empathize for the dragonfly.
The invertebrate zoology class was much less
violent.
Yes. But you know, there are opportunities for dissections and things and looking at creatures that used to be alive in an educational setting. And I got a lot of value out of that for myself and my relationship with nature. And, you know, maybe it's every kid's dream, at least for a little while, to be a marine biologist. I don't know if that's true or not, but I feel like it is. And I've never really let go of that. It comes to the surface from time to time, but it's my relationship with nature is this sort of like observe and be in awe and learn. Like, I want to learn everything. I love the octopus, and I can tell you all the different pieces about how to pluralize the octopus word and where it comes from and all of that.
Yes. Emoting facial expressions.
I love snails. I love butterflies. I love bees. I love, like, all sorts of little creatures. And maybe I have tattoos of them. Like, that's where my heart is as far as nature goes. But it's from a distance. It's from inside. When I'm out in it, it's much harder for me to have that appreciation. And I think part of that is that feeling of a loss of control. It's hard to be out here because it's hot. You know, I wish I could enjoy that more than I do. I like to watch other people enjoy it and be happy for them. You know, my brother lives out in Nevada, and he's got great expanses of desert and things that he loves to go out into. And like, that's great for him. Hooray. You know, I'm glad you can experience that. I wish I could too. It's an observational thing for me and a learning thing for me. But I'm just, you know, Christy, like you said, I'm just now sort of realizing that there's so many more ways to connect and to understand that has been missing for a long time.
So let's kind of take this one step deeper, and let's kind of take this down a little bit of a theological track. And so I think one of the things that I am really finding myself like ruminating on the last few days is the complicity of the American church to sever itself from the natural context that it finds itself in, and how we construct beautiful buildings and we fill those beautiful buildings typically with opaque stained glass where you can't see outdoors, and we have these big high cathedral ceilings and, you know, all of these very manufactured sacred elements, so that sacredness becomes connected to what is indoors, controllable, clean, beautiful, right? And like all of these kind of components. And in doing that, and in allowing Christianity to really kind of become a very indoor, practiced, embodied faith, how much the church has actually played a role in disconnecting people from creation that we talk about. And so creation is seldom, like, I grew up in church from, and I've said this on this podcast, from like utero, like there was never a time I was, even when I was pissed at the church, mm-hmm. I was still in the church, right? Sometimes mm-hmm. like to be like, I'll show you, I'll sit on the front row. And like this season of my life, these last 4 or 5 mm-hmm. weeks are the first weeks that I've not been in a church mm-hmm. building mm-hmm. on a weekend. And I find myself a lot just like deconstructing the dependency of a sacred space to experience what is already natural and sacred and beautiful. And Holly's dying to say something. Jump in.
Oh, no, this is just like a huge, huge, huge topic for me that I have so much passion and I'm not going to fit it all in. So I'm going to try to like hold back a little bit here. But I think the part that grieves the most, like, I think in a lot of my deconstructing, I look back even at my childhood of being in a church mm-hmm. building, and I think that there's this healing that happens in deconstruction where we can like pull apart times that had trauma mm-hmm. and then times that like held safety or softness or connectedness mm-hmm. and like the pieces of growing up in church that I remember the most are being outside mm-hmm. and playing on the playground and seeing a bird and that bird's feather, like a little feather came off of that bird. And I remember like talking to the bird, like, and I felt the spirituality there. Like I felt this divine connection to this bird and I had the feather. And I told my mom that the feather came from God because mm-hmm. in my head it was the bird. It wasn't mm-hmm. that like God gave me a feather. It was like God was in the bird and the bird left mm-hmm. me this gift and this beautiful reminder. And I had that feather forever. So like I look back at some of those things. And for me, I see where my heart for connection found connection points, even though there was gathering inside of a church building. I think where my grief exists so much is that so much of the disconnect in humanity between humans and the natural world has come about because there is not a survival and dependency in nature anymore. It came because we have buildings and we have air conditioning, we have heat, mm-hmm. because our food is now processed for us and we go to the grocery store and like mm-hmm. humans spend like 93% of their time indoors and the other 7% is spent walking to and from cars and buildings. Like yeah. we are so disconnected from nature. And I grieve because I think that church model, it is teaching us to connect to other humans and to try to find, well, hold on. You can jump on that.
Keep going. You're good.
I'm almost done. But it's literally like, let's gather as humans in yeah. a building and yeah, talk about right. God, and let's completely remove this, the most foundational relationship piece, which is when God created the world, he created trees and plants and animals, and he created this beautiful world, and then he created man and woman, and he placed them, or humans, like, from man and woman have come every race, every gender, every sexuality, like this beautiful creative piece of it. But then we've taken this one species and we've taken them into the church and said, find God, yeah. instead of find God here where you are an integral part of an interrelational world.
Yeah. No, 100%. I like I think back on a lifetime of being in the church, and y'all, I can't think, with the exception of our nationalistic 4th of July outdoor barbecue and fireworks mm-hmm. event, there was not a time pre-COVID, there was not a time pre-COVID that I can remember a Sunday school class, a youth group, a worship service, a church picnic, an anything mm-hmm. that we were outdoors.
Yeah.
Like there was never a time that we were studying creation that a Sunday school teacher said, let's go do this outside. Like, that wasn't a thing in my world. And I just look back on that now and I think the disconnect mm-hmm. to like that which we are worshiping and that mm-hmm. which we are talking about mm-hmm. from stained glass mm-hmm. and steeple, air conditioning and comfy pews and carpet that we're ignoring outside.
Yeah.
And I can't wrap my head around how much my own disconnected connection to the world and to nature, in all honesty, I think has been fostered inside the church.
Mm-hmm. I think, there's so much. because I think there's like, like I relate a lot to you, Holly, in that sense of like seeing divine messages and like feeling out in awe outside, and I think of my moments at like church camp is what I'm like my connections during that like that church season and being in those spaces. And you know, we sit outside underneath the stars at night and look at it and experience it, and it was beautiful. And I remember feeling really connected to nature and the divine in those moments. But when I would go to talk about that experience or that that feeling of connection, it was always in this way of having to disconnect. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm doing a great job of it, trying to describe it, but it was like I felt God in the stars that I saw last night, or in that reflection on the water, or like God was in this thing, mm-hmm. And related to the God in me. Like there was that deep sense of connection was always like there always had to be this disembodiment of mm-hmm. like God did this thing, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. this is what I reap the benefits of it, mm-hmm. Instead of like no, it's just in it.
Mm-hmm. And, or if you see God in it, that is that idolatry, like yes. Hearing a lot of that language, which then creates like a negative disconnect, this yes. like oh, I'm gonna push away from that as fast as I can, yes. instead of
yeah, now
I'm gonna
I question can't that appreciate yeah. that tree, because that means I'm trying to like God's that tree. Like there was this like mm-hmm. this weird narrative that I got when I would try to describe those experiences in the church.
So stay with me here for a second, Rue, because yes. I think there's another component of that that's really critical that we name, which is like the conservative evangelical church's relationship with the concept of spirituality. Mm-hmm. Because to find something as spiritual mm-hmm. was often actually seen as like rebellious mm-hmm. or, you know, being almost heretical, you know, yeah. in a way of like you're focusing and diverting attention away from the creator to the creation. Mm-hmm. And so you, in my conservative evangelical context, I don't know about yours, but mm-hmm. for me, like any time that anything was perceived as spiritual, yep. I was always challenged with, but that's not Christian.
Yeah.
And so like, again, to me, there was just this narrative reinforcing that Christianity was mm. disconnected from the awe mm. and the beauty that was mm-hmm. organic to mm-hmm. the world, and finding spiritual mm-hmm. expressions in the organic
yeah.
was actually discouraged and seen as wrong or bad
yeah.
versus being celebrated as something that draws me closer to the heart of a creator that gifted us with all of these beautiful pieces.
Oh my God, yes. And I name an instance because I think it embodies it well. So I don't know if anyone else had to do this in their Christian upbringing, but I had to write a paper about an argument for creationism was my like...
Was this in your homeschooling
context? This was in my homeschooling context, and it was a biology class.
What curriculum did you...
Abeka.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay,
yeah, go ahead. Abeka was what I used. And my biology teacher tasked us with this thing. And we could also do it for an argument for or against evolution, but no one did that.
Right. Oh, heaven forbid.
Yeah, heaven
right?
forbid. Okay. Except I did.
Of course you
did. I 100% did that in my Christian school too, Rue. I feel yes. a connection with
yes.
you right now.
I absolutely did. And it was honestly one of those moments that I like... actually dug in and started to look at and examine things. So I benefited it from long term, but I remember ending my paper with like, honestly, I don't know, but I remember saying like, but I love the way the like sun looks when it's mm-hmm. setting. Or I love the way that like the mountains are and how they form, like that's insane. Mm-hmm. And like this like connection with just the natural world and how it made me feel. Mm-hmm. And I got an F on the paper.
Because you elevated your feelings?
Because I elevated yep. my feelings mm-hmm. over like the argument of it. Mm-hmm. And I remember being so frustrated by that mm-hmm. because it was true for what I was experiencing. And honestly, I through all the paperwork, it was just, and research, I was like, Nolan, there's like, I mean, it's different from what I was what I believe and think now, but in like 14-year-old me was like, it sounds like no one knows. Right. And I want to just end it with something that I think is true. And being discouraged from connection with nature in that way, and the feelings that I get from nature, was so just evident.
Yeah.
And I think it was evident as I grew up. And I think it's still evident in a lot of church spaces because they need definitives.
Mm.
Was the message that I got. It's like, okay, it's not about what is true or what is ultimately expansive and makes people expand and grow. It's just about a definitive binary.
Well, and so let's fast forward the conversation and the experiences up to the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have this organizational structure that only knows how to exist inside of four walls,
mm-hmm.
stained glass, and a steeple, right? And it had it down to a science, you know? And I don't know about y'all, but like I was in church contexts where like I was handed a script for worship and like they were timed to the second, right? Like you can't pray 10 seconds over because you're going to throw off the whole service order, right? So like they had this production mm-hmm. element down indoors, and then enter a global health pandemic that drove everyone to shelter in place and drove us all into online church spaces for a season, which continued to try to follow the exact same production element. Like, seriously, I remember Holly and I being like watching all of these churches, right, that were much more traditional than what we were at the Connecting Grounds at the time. And I remember like watching pictures of friends, and I love y'all if you're listening, I'm just saying, that were like posting pictures still preaching from their pulpit in their full, you know, robes and collar and garb. And some of them like even like jokingly like put stuffed animals in the pews or pictures of people or like so that they didn't feel like they were preaching to an empty room, which they were. But like, it was trying to preserve normalcy. It was trying to mm-hmm. keep everything the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we entered, you know, kind of like phase two of the pandemic when people started getting vaccines and it was safe to gather in smaller groups outside, socially distanced. And again, like, we still tried to preserve a similar production element mm-hmm. outside. Like, I vividly remember some of our services outside, Holly, and like, I remember Scott trying to set up soundboards and, you know, everything so that we could have all the right elements in air quotes that I'm putting
mm-hmm.
up. And then like us just kind of being like, and it was really led by you, Holly, just being like, I just want to like take my shoes off and stand in the grass. And like, I just want to like appreciate the beauty of what we're surrounded by. And I think about it now and I like juxtapose all these aha moments,
mm-hmm.
Especially in this conversation around like deconstructing the church's relationship with nature. Just how hilarious that has to mm-hmm. look.
Yeah.
That an entire country of faith communities is standing outside gathering,
yeah.
literally pretending like they're still inside.
Yeah.
And we're not adjusting our language.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely were there, like, at least in the hundreds of services I watched, like, mm-hmm. even for research purposes, I can't think of maybe one or two mm-hmm. where someone said, just take a moment and listen to nature.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just take mm-hmm. a moment and look around you. Like, just bring a blanket and sit in the grass, right? Like, we were trying to recreate the look mm-hmm. and the feel.
Mm-hmm.
of this institutionalized religion, even in the midst of trying to gather outdoors. And mm-hmm. we were still disconnected. We're still
mm-hmm.
disconnected. We mm-hmm. raced back inside those buildings as fast as we could. And I say we as the corporate church, and went back to business as normal
mm-hmm.
and production as normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that we learned anything mm-hmm. from those outdoor services. And like, oh, wow, that was really beautiful to be outside. Maybe we should do that more often. Mm-hmm. It was really beautiful to have the birds singing with us. Let's acknowledge that in our liturgy. Like, I don't think that happened.
Well, and I think what's sad is, like, I vividly remember leading one of those outdoor services, and I was praying, and I stopped because there were, like, two or three little birds that flew overhead, and they were really loud, and I remember stopping, and I remember looking at them and smiling and making a comment. Like, I just stopped what I was doing and just made a comment about, like,
how much... that comment went, guys, you should open your eyes and look at the birds.
Mm-hmm. Yes, probably something like that. And just, but I remember, I can't remember now the amount of people that came up to me after that, but it was several who were like, I so appreciated that you did that. Mm-hmm. Like, it shocked me that you would stop something that's this ritualistic religious practice to, like, honor the fact that the birds were really happy and they were flying and they were just, like, joyous. And I remember after that, like, every time we were outside, it was like trying to name the wind or trying to name there was at one point a squirrel that ran across our thing, and just like I got giddy excited over this cute little squirrel that was probably trying to go find a place to bury a nut or something. But just like the awe of that and trying to like embody that. But just like I would question, do you, if you were one of those people that sat in an outdoor service, do you remember hearing the birds, or is that so familiar that you just disconnected from that? Like, do you remember seeing the way that nature, or did you feel, like, I love him, my husband, who's running sound, he would be setting up sound, and like the direct sunlight would be, he couldn't see the screen, so he'd like put a sweater over his head to hide it. And there was always part of me that was like, let's just do away with sound. Let's just do away with it. Well, we need it for live streaming. Let's just, like, why does that matter?
Yeah.
And just like those pieces of it, like, did nature inconvenience you? Were you willing to adapt to that? Yeah, and by the end of it, we were. It was like, let's just do away with.
But like, I have a picture of Scott with a blanket over his head covering him, the soundboard, and the computer screen. And now that you say that, I just think to myself, boy, if that's not the image for so many of us during those outdoor services of like, the sun is distracting me, the birds are noisy, like all these things, and I just want...
Mm-hmm.
And like, and that's not a dig on Scott. That's just like, that's our posture that is familiar.
Yeah.
Is like the screen and the formality steps of things. And like you said it earlier, Rue, when I joked of like, maybe that's why I don't like nature, that, that being out of control piece.
Yeah.
And the church clings to control.
Oh yeah.
I was just thinking about that, how, it strikes me as being out of control and this overarching element of fear from and of nature in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's sort of the great equalizer.
Yeah.
First of all, everybody has access. Like, if we're all at a service and we're outside, we can all sit in the grass and experience the same grass in contrast to some of those big events.
Yeah.
We were talking about these privileged events, and so we don't have that those divides anymore.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And the other thing I've been thinking about is, you know, the other awe-filled events like a tornado, another great equalizer. It doesn't see anything besides what it's happens to be in its path. And that's really, really scary for people for a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've been thinking about is sort of that veil of fear, that lens of fear that the church may see nature through.
Well, you know, and I think too, Sarah, there's a piece of that we heard this narrative again and again during COVID of like people were afraid and they wanted to be in a place that gave them comfort. And that place for people who were followers of religious teachings, right? They were saying like, I want to have access to my sacred gathering spaces. Mm-hmm. And so whether those were online or they were outside or they raced back into buildings sooner than they should have. But like there was this draw to the sacred, but it was a building and it was a church and it was a service. And again, like I just find myself pondering post this, you know, conversation you and I had on Friday night of like, the disconnection and really so much of that was centered around, you know, the disconnection of blackness and nature and like how to heal that and build that. And I honor that 100%, but I've just found myself thinking like, but there's also like the greater connection of like Christianity from nature,
mm-hmm.
period. And that transcends any mm-hmm. level of privilege mm-hmm. or poverty or any mm-hmm. dividing piece. And I just, I keep coming back to this idea of like the draw for comfort and familiarity was in buildings instead of in the great outdoors, in the skies and the clouds and the sun mm-hmm. and the grass and the birds and the nature. We all have access to.
Yeah.
Right. And like, that's always constant because again, like God is embodied in creation. Mm. And so like for me, one of the topics that I love to talk about and teach on is innovative theology. And we did a whole podcast last year on innovation theology. And it's this idea that you either look at creation in one of two ways, right? You look at creation as a past historical event, right? And more of like a dispensationalist kind of view of like God did create, past tense, historical. He created in, you know, 6 days. He rested on the seventh. This has happened. God created in the past. I don't ascribe to that. I have always been someone who views innovative theology as God is creating currently present. Holly, like your friendship, probably more than any other thing in my life, has embodied innovative theology to me because like we will walk out of a coffee shop and Holly will be like, do you see the wildflowers? And like gets so excited and goes over and like hugs a tree or lays down in the grass. And like, again, that's not always my jam, but like I love the excitement that you feel when you see creation taking present tense place around us. And that that's not a past thing to be worshipped. That is a present action to worship and to engage with and celebrate and honor and affirm and join in. And you're teaching me to be more excited about those things.
Thank you.
I have a long way to go. I have a lot to deconstruct still.
I'm with you, Christy. Like,
but I'm committed
yes.
to doing the deconstruction.
We can do this together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love this. I'm going to take you all with me.
Where are we going?
On a journey of magical spiritual connection.
Oh, okay.
Is it inside?
Loving the earth. Is it inside?
No, I think what I would kind of like to wrap up for myself is just like, maybe deconstructing a little bit about like the word spirituality, because I think that when I understood that more, I felt a lot more freedom, I think, for myself. And so like really one of the biggest differences between spirituality and religion, and there's a lot of this conversation I'm not going to go on, on in, there's a lot of pieces of that that are coming from a lot of other exciting things that are coming, but my understanding of spirituality is that spirituality seeks to find the divine in all things and its connection, the interconnectedness. It's like this focus on the fact that there's relationships and there is connection and there is sacredness. Like that's really spirituality. And what's beautiful about spirituality is it's this massive open door that says, I'm not saying it's this God or it's this religion or it's this. Mm-hmm. It's saying here is kind of this almost a worldview or perspective and input where you find that input creator, what that means to you, input like that process. Whereas like religion is much more focused on practices and rituals, which are really good and beautiful and can be found in spirituality too. But sometimes I think religion prioritizes like to the point where we don't understand why we do what we do. Like I remember as a kid, I didn't understand why we did communion as often as we did, but we did it. And it's, so it's like these practices, these rituals, and then it's this right or wrong, false or true. It's like hyper-focused on like, I'm right, you're wrong. So if I'm right, everybody else is wrong. And like the beautiful piece about spirituality is like that connection piece. And I think to me, like when you go hug a tree, the tree responds. Like the tree's alive. And if you go and hug a tree, there's a really great children's book everybody should read. It's I will have to link it because I can't remember it's Bear Hug, the Big Bear Hug. And it's about a bear that likes to hug everything. And its favorite thing to hug is trees. And a man comes with an axe and tries to chop down the tree. And the bear is going to eat the man, but then decides that's not my nature. So he hugs the man instead. And it's this like healing book about hugging trees. But I say that all to say, sorry, random rabbit trail. Everybody should read this book, though. Like, when you hug a tree, there's actually healing properties and a connection to that tree. Like, there is chemicals and there's properties in that tree that actually can cause anti-inflammatory responses in us. Our cortisol levels lower, which means that we experience, like, our parasympathetic nervous system is activated, so we actually experience feeling relaxed and we feel calm. And what they say is that, like, if you I brought up the bear book because, like, I meant that to say, if you go to, like, chop down a tree, the tree's not going to respond well. But if you go to hug the tree and you're gentle and you're respectful, trees actually grow better. There's actually, like, they respond to human voices. Like, we, as I breathe out, that tree breathes in, and we're, like, exchanging oxygen. And it's, like, this beautiful spiritual connection of, like, we need each other and we benefit from each other. And if that's not divine, then I don't know what else is, because I've never experienced that level of, like, reciprocity and love and mutual respect that is founded on nothing but existence anywhere inside of a church building.
And I think you say something that's really critical that I want to make sure we all catch, which is not just hug a tree because it's beautiful and
has but you should.
In honor of Earth Month this month, everyone should hug a tree. But I think it's also really critical for us to acknowledge that the difference between religion and spirituality is also, like, religion is corporate. Religion is systematic. Religion is, you know, how organized structures can disseminate through man-made systems. Spirituality is personal. And if your spirituality is rooted in a building and in liturgy and in formality and is dependent upon those things and is not organically rooted in the beauty of what everything in this world is foundationally grounded in, literally, then I think there is a challenge there for you to deconstruct the core of your own spirituality that's really important. Sarah, Rue, last thoughts from you guys?
I think I could probably be a lot more comfortable hugging a tree than another person at this point. I mean, let me give that a try.
And when Sarah hugs you, it's a tremendous honor. You know that there is a genuine reciprocal connection there. So.
And I think for me, I'd like to begin this sort of deconstruction that Christy, you've been talking about for myself and perhaps collectively under Holly's guidance. We'll see. But I think for me, the starting place is going to be where my interests sort of already lie. If I can build on, hey, I see things, I see God in the octopus. You know, that will be a starting place for me because I already have a foundation to build from there. And, you know, when I hear Holly geek out about wildflowers and things, it's almost like a jealousy, you know, like I would like to have that kind of connection too. And so, you know, my journey may look very different from where she is at, and that's okay too. But that's something I would like to prioritize.
Oh my gosh. I think one of the things I think of when I think of, like, nature and spirituality and what it invites me to, I think it invites me to have a posture of play. And play, I say play in two senses. The sense of also, like, feeling whimsical and imaginative and all those things. And
also something not appreciated in faith spaces.
Not at all. Which is why I've, just side tangent, why I've always loved, like, youth ministry, because it's that is the foundation of youth ministry is just play. And also the embodiment that offers, where I can sit down, like, you sit down and think of how kids go outside and they're eating a cake, but it's really just mud. And it's like these moments to see magical stories in nature, and how that learning about it, or being in it, or you know, whatever that looks like, how it offers and invites you to play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you should not just hug a tree, you should also try to climb a tree.
Whoa, Holly.
Whoa. We're going to get complaints and like, I fell out of the tree.
We'll also be posting pictures of Holly in various trees. It's one of her favorite things to do. I get like Snapchats of Holly in a tree way more often than anyone probably realizes. And a lot of them come from my teenager who is like out with Holly doing adventures. And Lynn's like, Holly's in a tree again.
And I'm supposed to tell you again. Right. Yeah. She's in another tree.
Well, I think my final thought. So Holly, I haven't told you this. But ever since we came back from our trip, because I was really processing all of this and I'm taking it very seriously because I recognize, I think this is an enormous issue. And I think it's a foundational issue and it's an issue of deconstruction and it's an issue of religious trauma that I don't think anyone's really connecting the dots on. And so, I know that there are a lot of dots to be connected and I'm so excited to, be on a new journey with you. And I'm so excited to tell you all about it soon. We are almost there. We keep alluding to all of these things. Trust me, it is worth the wait.
At this part, it's just fun.
It really is kind of fun. But there's a lot of these components to that future journey. But what I haven't told you is that since we got home, I have like made myself like very intentional to try to like go outside and just like be present. Mm-hmm. And now this is the piece that for those of you that know me is really impressive. Like I didn't take my computer outside. I didn't go outside and work. Well, I did one day, but I did the other part first. I was like, this is nice. I could actually work out here for a little while. But like I've taken my coffee outside and just sat in my backyard, which is not very pretty and, you know, picturesque. It's not a probably ideal place, but it's the mundane for sure. You know, like we don't have a tree in our backyard, but like
I have grass, we do flowers and clover.
Yeah, my husband dug most of it up recently, but we're planting a garden, so like there will be a thing. But all that to say, like I am trying to meet myself where I'm at. So Sarah, like when you say I want to try, I want to start, like for me I think it's starting in the most mundane spaces. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't always have the time or the bandwidth to like, I'm going to pick up and go work at the park for 2 hours or, you know, go do these things. But like, I can take 10 minutes and drink my coffee outside and just be in that space. And for me, that is really, really difficult because I'm the opposite of a lot of you at this table. We joke about like how I'm surrounded by ADD people. And I love all of that. But like, I am like hyper fixated, which is also its own form of things. And I recognize that. So it's hard for me to just like be still and be present. That's always been a lifetime struggle. And so being still and present in nature and listening to birds and watching my dog run around, has been a challenge. It has not been easy because it is not instinctual to me. But I am learning to try to develop that as a discipline. Mm-hmm. And so like my heart and my hope is in sharing that for those of you who like me are recognizing that there is a deep disconnect in yourself from the organic roots of faith and the organic creation of this world and the divine nature of it for those who share that belief system that I ascribe to. I think that the best place to begin is right where you are and very slowly and disciplining yourself to make the natural world more of a priority in your day-to-day life. And I think as you start there, maybe tree hugging comes and tree climbing comes and all of the adventures that I get so excited to watch you celebrate. Maybe those come someday. But for right now, it is sitting quietly in natural spaces and paying attention.
I'm going to insert a 30-second thought because I know we need to wrap up. But I think
I feel like you are the appropriate person to close us.
Mm-hmm. I have a quote I'd like to read actually to do that, but one very quick thought is, I think if you're not quite at the tree hugging place, something that I really recommend is a stepping stone to connection. We have this really magical thing. If you are an iPhone user and you take a photo on the Photos app, there's actually a plant identifier on there. If you click on the photo down at the bottom, there's like the little info button, I think. And there's like a little plant that pops up. And if you click on it, it'll actually help identify the name of that plant. And I share that to say, I think that's one of the greatest things that connects us, because there's something beautiful about the knowing the name of something. It's not just this really pretty purple flower outside, it's henbit. You know, it's not this really beautiful, you know, pink flower, because right now we've got a lot of, like, there's something about knowing when you're like, I know your name and now I see you everywhere. So that's kind of a stepping stone. But
which is also really beautiful to how God views each of us, mm-hmm. right? Like, we're not just this mass creation of humanity. Mm-hmm. You know, God looks down and sees Rue and sees Sarah and sees Holly mm-hmm. and sees Christy and celebrates the beauty in each of that. So I think there's something holy about the act of naming.
Yeah. Mm. I'd like to close with a quote by Dr. Jane Goodall. I think that it's important that in faith spaces we draw an intersection with people that are existing in a world of natural connection with scientists, with mm-hmm. with, you know, individuals who that's their everyday existence and their professional work. And it's just this beautiful sentence she writes. It says, "The forest is for me a temple, a cathedral of tree canopies and dancing light."
Mm. So friends, go forth and find natural spaces to connect with worship and awe and the beauty of creation around you. And that, to me, is the best way to celebrate Earth Month. Mm-hmm. It is the best way to challenge yourself to deconstruct the root and the nexus of your connection with the divine. Because if it's not rooted in something natural, I think we have some work to do and some spaces to shift. I know I do. Sarah's acknowledging that she does. So we'll keep you posted on our journey as we keep you posted on other new things to come. So, all right. Well, we will be back next week. Next week, we're going to be honoring a conversation around neurodivergency. April is also Autism Awareness Month. And I think all of us around this table have people in our worlds that we love and ourselves and all the things that do not fall under neurotypicality. And so we're going to be talking about that. Sarah, feel free to come back and hang out with us again.
I totally could.
Yes. And then we are just a couple of weeks away from our next Flip Table Live, which will be happening in St. Louis on April the 26th, that Friday night. And we will be at Webster Groves Christian Church, and we will be talking about the intersections of faith communities and foster care. And so that's going to be a really cool event. We're really excited to be back in St. Louis. And so if you are in that area, we hope that you will join us. All right. We'll see you guys back next week.